news.
BSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
Number two of the program here on Friday on Valentine's Day, and coming up, I'll play for you my favorite love song of all time. I that's the way I feel about it, but sometimes it can fluctuate depending on, you know, how a song hits me. But this is one that I consider, and it's an oldie. It's not anything relatively new, so play that a little bit later on. But speaking of things that you can play and listen to, the Freedom Fools podcast is now available at WBSM.com, on the WBSM app, and wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm assuming, because I just checked and noticed it's on Apple Podcasts, and that's usually the slowest one to get podcasts going. So if you have not had a chance to catch Freedom Fools, Brian Thomas's new show that airs at 6 p.m. weeknights here on WBSM, you can get caught up over the weekend. Because every episode of Freedom Fools is available for you now on podcast. And Brian's had some great conversations on there. Great interviews, great guests, great calls from you. And he'll be back here again tonight taking your calls, 508-996-0500. We'll be joined later on this hour by Laura Jaworski. She is the executive director of House of Hope. We'll talk about the Echo Village pallet houses, the little sheds on pallets that are going to be used to house the unhoused in Providence. And then coming up later on, we're going to have the announced winner of our South Coast's Cutest Couple contest. So we'll have the top 10 for you. We'll have an article up on WBSM.com where you can see who the top 10 were. You can see who the winner was, and how some of the voting shook out. And this was one that was a little bit weird because, you know, generally you see people going in and voting for themselves every single day and getting all their friends to vote for themselves and sharing it around and saying, hey, vote for us. And very quickly we saw a shift in this one where even the people who were competitors in this contest were sharing and saying, vote for this couple, vote for this couple. And so the grand prize winner ran away with it. And we'll have more for you on that a little bit later on. We can also take your calls, 508-996-0500, and your app chat and messages and open line voicemails on the WBSM app. Let's go to the phones. Good morning. You're on WBSM.
Good morning.
How you doing?
My beloved.
Are you ready for Valentine's Day?
You know what? I think, yes, I am. It's kind of special for me. I'll tell you why real quick, because I want to talk about other stuff. But this is really, really important. Mom, she had a cactus, a Christmas cactus, that her son gave her. And when she passed, her son told her daughter, give it to her, give it to Skinny. And I was like, are you sure? And she was like, yeah, no, he said to have it. And so when I got it that year, it bloomed four times only. Yeah, I think it was four. Then last year, it bloomed eight tubular flowers. But it always blooms in November, which kind of says it's not a Christmas cactus. There's another one. I can't think of it. Sorry. But I'm like saying, this is crazy. Because to get eight blooms was amazing. And I sent the pictures to her and to send to his son and, you know, to mom's son. And anyways, it's blooming. Kim.
Wow.
I know. I'm telling you, this is so not, this is like weird. I was Googling it and it was like, this is weird. Really weird. I'm so excited I can't even talk. But I, that's such a big deal for me. It's like, Mom, I like, I swear she's giving, because she always told me, go get a bow. Stop mourning the loss of your husband. You're too young. You need to, you know, that's what she kept saying to me. But so here it is. And I swear to you, I don't know how or why, but every morning I go in there, and I was actually calling you in early, and I hung up because they saw the sun coming through my sliding glass door, and it was orange. And I said, oh, crap, I got to go to the front room and move the plant. And I'm telling you, I don't know what it is, Kim, but I feel like it's her giving me, you know, a Valentine hug. There's six blooms on it when it's not even supposed to be blooming again.
Sounds like a sign to me.
Yeah, I think so. So that is my Valentine. And Laura, what a sweetheart. 8 or 9 days ago, she gave me a card because she felt like I, you know, needed a laugh. And, you know, needed to feel good. And so she gave me this card and she gave me this cutest little bird. Oh my God, it's only 5 feet tall and it's pink and it's got this old time captain hat, like the, not like a captain hat, like boom, you know, like, but the old, I don't know, like you would find on an old port, fisherman port type of hat.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a little mail bag on its chest and one letter. My husband was a mail carrier and, you know, she put, like, that was really sweet. So I'm a very happy girl about Valentine's. But I just, okay, so I just want to get to Val's. I actually lived, I don't know if you remember this. I think I called in and told you. I lived across the street from Val's in that little house. You said you lived across the street from Val's, so you must have lived in the house that was for rent.
No, I lived in the Galt Road Apartments.
I don't know what that is.
There's the apartment buildings across the street.
Oh, yes, of course I do. A kitty corner to it.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so I lived across the street, and then when I moved there, okay, so this is just so crazy that you were bringing this up. I went across the street to Val's, and I was sitting there, and I was having a cocktail, and I was thinking, I wanted to get to know the vibe of the neighborhood, because I just moved there. And then I was talking, and the young lady that was working then, said, oh, never seen you, blah, blah, blah. Conversation, what do you do? House cleaning, blah, blah, blah. She goes, oh, we know somebody that needs a helper. She needs somebody. She's got her business. She needs some. I thought, are you kidding me? I'm all in. So me and her became friends. We ended up cleaning the owner's house of Val's.
Oh, Judy? Judy and Carl? Or
no,
the other bumps?
The father, I'm older,
what was his name?
And so listen, he had foxes in his backyard when we were cleaning, and she goes, yeah, he feeds them. We cleaned his house so good, and then his son lived behind Val's.
Mm-hmm.
So when we got done cleaning, we went over there to get paid, because she's already established a cleaning with them, but she's never gone to the father's. So with me, she already knew I had a cleaning business, but I told her I didn't have anybody I could count on. All my friends even failed me. I had to fire them, which is things, firing your friends. But her and me, wow, what a great thing. So it's so funny listening to you talk about all that, and I'm so well connected to it all. And cleaning there, it was amazing. We did a great job, and then we went over to the sun. Him knowing her longer, she got scratch tickets and money, and I got a free meal. He delivered it to me across the street. Plus, I got a big tip for great job, plus my pay, obviously. But it's funny because when I loved Val's, and what they did, that those two places across the street was such an eyesore. And I am going to say this because I don't even think they're there anymore. They were slumlords. Absolutely unbelievable, the junk he had in the backyard. I never got to see the backyard. You know, you go in this house, you're looking, but you don't see the actual garage full of stuff. He had an RV. I saw that, and they said, oh, don't worry, he's going to move. You know, he himself said, oh, I'm going to move that out. And then he had one to the left, and then the wife saying, oh, no, we're going to get rid of that. The whole place was a mess. His son lived next door with his a girl. I don't think they were married, and they had a baby and a pit bull and big backyards we had. But mine was just full of crap for you know, a certain area I view. But anyways, needless to say, they moved out. I had to report them to the Board of Health because of the mold in that place. And they took my rent up to $1,500 a month.
Wow.
Because they found out I reported them to the Board of Health with all the mold growing in there. I couldn't figure it out why I kept... It was from the floor. It used to be a... somebody told me it used to be where they... what do you call it? Auto mechanic shop. So all that oil and stuff went down through the ground.
Oh, yeah, so I can see that.
So the rug, my rug was on top of cement, a cement ground. And underneath it was from the mechanics. It was just crazy. And I got yelled at for using too much water for the cesspool. And they said, well, I'm not an elderly person. Got to take a shower every day. But I have to tell you, even living there with all that nightmare, going across the street to Vela, eventually they got rid of the windows because they didn't want people coming into the bar area looking across at that BS. And as it is now, that house, they still had somebody living there, I think about a year ago, the little teeny house. And that's all fenced off, the whole property line. So I don't know if the town came down on them for negligence of pop. I don't even know.
Yeah, I know the red one is all boarded up.
Both of them are now.
Oh, both are, yeah. I'm looking at a photo here on Google Maps from 2023.
No, it's all fenced off. So somewhere between last year, and I think there was a prime delivery driver that was living in the little one-bedroom house that I was renting. And I thought, how can you live there? I know what it's going to be like, right? And but now that's all fenced off. But Bell's was very smart to take their windows out. And that is the best restaurant for Italian food. And this always jam-packed. So I can't believe that's going to go out of business. And I'm going to say it can't be going out of business because of the fact there's no customers. I think it's what you said. It's just generational, where the next generation, because I'm going back 23 years ago when I lived there and was working for the Bells, you know, cleaning the father and the son and with that girl. It was a long time ago.
Well, I'll say this, there's nothing that indicates that they're closing. They're still open. I called over there yesterday. They're still open and business as usual. So I wouldn't be too worried. And about Donald Bump. That was his name. Donald. Right? Is that who you're talking about?
You're asking my brain to go back. It very well could have been.
Yeah.
But I know his son that lived in the apartment in the back will know about, like I said, when I met her, it was a blessing for me. We went to the owner's house. I remember meeting him. He was a really nice guy. He was of age then, so I'm pretty sure he's passed on. Not to say that somebody can't live to 100. My almost, she was 94. But and his son lived in the back. So
well, yeah. I thank you for sharing the memories.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It really was. I remember I couldn't even get mail on that side of the street. I had to get a P.O. box. And I even kept it when I moved down here for 2 years. Even though I have meal right here where I live. I wanted a reason to go back to West Wareham. I love Bell's. They really do have great... and they're so jam-packed with people. Well, they're telling you food is great.
You can still go over there and get it.
I just want to do one more thing, if I may.
Very quickly, because I got to take a break.
Okay, I'm going to do it really quick. So... If everybody doesn't have a Valentine's, and this is for you too, Tim, and Barry, and Chris, and Brian. I know they probably aren't, will never get this, but I just want to read it to everybody real quick, okay? There are very few people like you. There are very few people with warmth, understanding, and ability to listen. And that's to all the listeners out there and you, all the radio hosts. And that's why you mean so very much and why today is the perfect time to tell you all happy Valentine's Day. Sketty loves all of you out there. You're my family, and all of you truly are. And Tim, you're you know, all of you guys are my Valentine's. So you guys have a great Valentine's weekend.
You as well. We all love you.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Okay, bye.
And we are going to take a break here. 508-996-0500. See, there you go. All of you have a Valentine and Sketty, so there you go. We'll be back in just a few moments.
For a million years, then if it don't work out, then if it don't work out, then you can tell me goodbye. Sweet my coffee with a morning kiss. Soften my dreams with your sigh. Tell me you love me for a million years. Then if it don't work out, then if it don't work out, then you can tell me goodbye.
And that is my favorite love song of all time, The Casinos. Then you can tell me goodbye. And you put that on with a nice pair of headphones, listening to that stereo version, and you can close your eyes and actually picture them in the studio recording that song. And it's funny because not this past year, but the year before, after we programmed all the 50s night music, someone reached out to me and said, you love The Casinos. You've said that before. Why didn't you play The Casinos during 50s night? And I said, because that song was actually released in 1967. You just don't think that. It sounds like it came out in the doo-wop era of the 50s, but this was kind of a throwback to that era in 1967. So it doesn't qualify under my 50s night guidelines, if it has to have been recorded between January 1st, 1950 and December 31st, 1959. So that does not make it into 50s night because it's not a 50s song, despite the way that it may sound. So there you go. Give that a spin for your sweetheart today. The Casinos, then you can tell me goodbye. Tell me you'll love me for a million years. None of it don't work out. Then you can tell me goodbye. So everybody deserves a shot. A million years might be a long one to ask. All right, we got to go into the news. We'll be back in a few moments, and we're going to be joined by Laura Jaworski of House of Hope to talk about the Palette Village, the Echo Village that has opened up in Providence, and whether or not that might work in New Bedford. But right now, let's turn things over to Phil Devitt in the WBSM newsroom.
Trump puts more federal jobs on the chopping block. A kayaker swallowed by a whale lives to tell the tale. And can Captain America captivate moviegoers this weekend?
From the Cottage Street Motors WBSM newsroom, this is WBSM News.
The Trump administration is ordering the mass firing of probationary federal employees. On Thursday, the Office of Personnel Management met with agency leaders and advised them to begin firing any probationary employees immediately. OPM data indicates hundreds of thousands of employees will be affected. Employees with probationary status have typically been working in the federal government for less than 2 years.
President Trump has promised to restore the American dream in this country. A healthy person has 1,000 dreams. A sick person only has one.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is the new head of the Department of Health and Human Services. He was sworn in Thursday afternoon in the Oval Office as President Trump watched on. The Senate voted 52-48 to make Kennedy Jr. the next health secretary. Americans' credit card debt has reached a record high of $1.21 trillion. That's according to a report released by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York on Thursday. The increase is part of a broader rise in household debt, which now totals over $18 trillion over credit cards, mortgages, auto loans, and student loans. A kayaker is alive after a humpback whale swallowed him whole, and it was all caught on camera. Adrian Simonkis was kayaking in the waters off Chilean Patagonia over the weekend with his dad when the whale swallowed him before spitting him back out. He told UK Channel 4 News he thought the whale approached him out of curiosity or to try to communicate. Igloo is recalling more than 1 million coolers over concerns they could amputate fingertips. The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission says the recall involves Igloo's 90-quart flip-and-toe rolling coolers. The CPSC says the toe handle can pinch consumers' fingertips against the cooler, posing crushing hazards. People who have those coolers are being told to stop using them immediately and contact Igloo to get a free replacement handle. 61 years after Beatlemania first hit America, Paul McCartney's still creating a buzz in New York City. The legendary rocker has announced a third and final surprise show at New York's Bowery Ballroom. He'll take the stage at the 600-capacity venue tonight. He played the Bowery on Tuesday and Wednesday, only selling tickets in person and limiting them to one per person. First two shows saw him play Beatles classics such as Get Back and Hey Jude, along with songs from his Wings days, including Let Me Roll It and 1985. And Captain America, Brave New World, aiming for a huge start at the box office. The Marvel Studios film is projected to make $95 million in its first weekend in theaters through the President's Day holiday on Monday. It's also expected to bring in around $110 million internationally as well. Also new this week is Paddington in Peru, the third film in the franchise, projected to make between $15 and $17 million in its debut weekend.
WBSM Sports.
The Four Nations Face-Off International Hockey Tourney comes to Boston next week for three games, including the championship. Bruins resume their season on the 22nd, and it's NBA All-Star Weekend. Expect to see the Celtics pick back up in Philadelphia on Thursday.
Now, your ABC 6 South Coast forecast.
Mostly sunny and windy today, a high of 32 degrees. On Saturday, early sun turning cloudy with snow later, a high of 31. On Sunday, widespread rain, especially early, a high of 39. And on Monday, the sun returns, but it'll be windy again, a high of 30. This WBSM News Update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy. Only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven. I'm Phil Devitt for WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's news talk station, WBSM, and get all of our content and breaking news alerts with the WBSM app.
All right, we have joining us now on the line Laura Jaworski, the executive director of House of Hope in Rhode Island, and they're the group that is going to be operating this Echo Village, a way to create shelter for 45 homeless individuals in the Providence area. Let's bring her on. Good morning, Laura. How are you today?
Good morning. Happy Friday.
To you as well. And it's been a very busy week, I know, over there for all the folks at House of Hope with the launch of Echo Village. It's now open and ready after all these delays and holdups over the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a long time coming. And, you know, while it's not a place to envy being having to open shelter, right? It's not something we necessarily want to celebrate, but we're really proud of the fact that we've created a space for 45 unhoused individuals to come live in particularly in the wintertime and get off the cold streets.
So, and these are, you know, I want to emphasize, this is not something where somebody would look at this and say, oh, wow, look, I'm getting an apartment. I want to live here all the time. These are small, you know, kind of basically converted shed type facilities. It's just designed to give people safe shelter and be a transitional period for them to be able to get from the streets to being able to get into more stable housing. This isn't trying to be a permanent housing solution for these folks.
Absolutely. So the company that manufactures this product, the name is Pallet, and they're based out in Washington State. And these are called rapidly deployable units. And so they're meant to be constructed really quickly and set up for someone to come immediately off the streets and provide them with protection against the elements, protection against violence, and really provide a safe place for someone to sleep without being afraid that their encampment location might get, you know, disbanded, or they have to move on, or if they're sleeping in their vehicle, that might get towed. So they're purposely made. They, of course, are four walls and a roof. They're heated and they're cooled, and they have a door that locks. But there's no plumbing within them. There's not cooking facilities within them. They are sited within a larger kind of village concept, if you will, where, you know, bathrooms and showers are on site and meals are provided. But they're just meant to be a rapid solution for communities that are facing an unsheltered crisis to get folks out of tents and out of vehicles, keep them physically safe, allow them to rest, and be able to stay connected with them as a service provider so that we can really move them forward into permanent options like housing.
And that's part of the key, is because House of Hope will be there on site offering them those services, offering them health services and trying to find employment and things like that.
Absolutely. So House of Hope, we are a nonprofit in Rhode Island. And the bulk of the work that House of Hope is doing here is our street-based outreach work. So we have outreach workers that are in the Providence metro area, but in other communities across the state, connecting with people who are facing unsheltered homelessness. And so we've been able to connect with them and only do so much when we're trying to do that work outside, right? Again, it's a mobile population, and oftentimes we go back to a site and we can't find them. So being able to bring folks to a location like Echo Village and providing not just the services I already mentioned, but having staff on site is a real critical factor. My team will be at the location 24/7, awake and on site, and case managers are a part of the services that we have available, so people can, like you mentioned, get their IDs. They might have lost that, or birth certificates. Those are two really important vital documents in order to move into housing. And it's a critical factor to having someone be successful. It's just having a place for them to stay in the same location, and then we can support them moving forward.
And will there be a screening process for the individuals, or are there certain types of rules and regulations they have to follow when they're staying there?
In Rhode Island, we have what's called the coordinated entry system. Many communities have some type of a process that they follow. And ours here is our coordinated entry system. It's a phone line that you call into, or you can engage with a street outreach worker. And various eligibility criteria are set forward for Echo Village. Of course, it's in Providence, so, you know, agreeing to want shelter in the city is an important factor. Even though we're small, it's an important component of being able to support someone being surrounded in those natural other supports. But it's really also designed to be what's called low barrier. So we have minimal amount of requirements because we've targeted folks who have been on the streets the longest. Folks should have complex medical conditions, folks for whom our shelter system has not been able to serve for any number of reasons. And what our goal is to have minimal amount of eligibility criteria besides those that I've already mentioned, because our goal is to get someone into a safe environment where they're out of the elements and they can also have a dignified experience, right, for life. So it's important to remember those factors. Some of the barriers that we see here in our state is we only have one shelter in Rhode Island for couples, and you have to separate. And so with our criteria, we said couples will be welcome here, as well as pets. Many of the people that our street outreach team is seeing, they have perhaps a cat or a dog with them. And instead of having to face their own human survival or surrendering their pet, we've designed a program where we have a space that can be supportive of them and their desire to be responsible pet owners. So we've really taken a lot of time to be thoughtful around the reasons why our shelter system has said no to these individuals and designed a program that says yes.
So, and you said that this is, you know, within, obviously this is in Providence, so you're dealing with the Providence population, but are you going to be taking in people from other communities, or are you looking exclusively at people who have been, you know, within the confines of Providence for a period of time?
So as a part of our policy and being situated in Providence, we are able to participate in what's called a regional prioritization. So about two-thirds of our census at Echo Village will be folks from Providence. It's a significant, obviously, city here in our state. It's our capital. It's where many folks come or are, really, because of the various services that are available. And we've just seen the number of encampments really grow in our city. but it's not exclusive to Providence residents. It's really for anyone who is in need of shelter. But again, we're really emphasizing a priority for folks who have been living on the streets the longest. So we know we've engaged with about 1,000 folks every single year that are unsheltered. And there's plenty of folks that are in need that have been on the streets and have sometimes haven't had a place of their own for over a decade, if not longer. And so this is a significant step forward for them to be able to come in. When we first started this concept and really exploring this idea, it was very early on in the pandemic, the summer of 2020. And we really took some time to understand why, in addition to all of the common reasons that we've heard folks couldn't come into shelter, some of what I've already mentioned, the pandemic put on an extra layer. And so we really took some time to think through what are those barriers and what else could we do by just focusing on this significant number of folks here in Rhode Island that are chronic. Before the pandemic hit, we had less than 100 chronically homeless individuals here in our state. Now we've seen that number grow up to 600-700 individuals. So we've been witnessing this explosion on the front lines as the pandemic, the opioid epidemic, the unsheltered crisis, all of these things have intersected. And we also felt that we had a moral obligation to sort of take that step forward and change how emergency shelter is done here in our state.
Well, now we know that a lot of the unhoused population, unfortunately, you know, substance abuse disorder is an issue with some folks who are unhoused. Is there rules about sobriety in Echo Village, or are people able to, you know, partake in those substances?
Mm-hmm. So when we look at the information gathered about who is experiencing homelessness and how folks are ending up in those situations, by and large, the number one reason why folks are in an unsheltered situation is because they can't afford to pay for housing. Mm-hmm. That is the number one reason why folks experience homelessness. What happens after that is, yes, oftentimes folks may develop a substance use issue or a mental health condition, but it's an effect. It's not necessarily always the cause. And we often see that the folks that are chronically homeless, long-term homeless, do have significant substance use challenges. While Echo Village will not allow substances to be used, we know in our experience that folks may still present under the influence. And so our team is well-equipped to recognize what is going on for folks, doing some really intense case conferencing. Folks are going to be transitioning in from being supported by our street outreach team into the case managers at Echo. So we're going to have that information to be aware of. But then also some of those tools that we mentioned. We'll have Narcan available in every unit. We'll have Sharps containers available. And really drawing on our expertise, having done this work for 30 years, so that we're making sure that we're providing a safe environment for people, but also holding them accountable and moving them forward.
And which, by the way, is no different than if this was, you know, a traditional homeless shelter situation. The same rules would be applied. You know, you can say people wouldn't be allowed to do substances in there, but you're not turning them away if they come in under the influence either.
Absolutely. Our priority is to keep folks safe. And it's our role and our responsibility to provide them with that shelter or to connect them if they are in a very dangerous situation. So if somebody does present and they need more help than we can provide, than what our training allows for, then we will have to call on, you know, other trained professionals. But as a rule, folks are not allowed to use substances inside a shelter. And so we'll be following that same guidance. But we also, like I said, we've been doing this work long enough that in the event that somebody does present under the influence, do we have that training, either, as I mentioned, with Narcan or first aid CPR, but also with the staffing model. We're going to be staffed 24/7, awake team members that will be moving around the village frequently, having eyes on folks. And again, it's to help keep folks safe. We know very much from doing our work and being versed in harm reduction that when folks are together, they're safer. And so that's a really critical component as well when we look at who we're serving. It's a very dangerous concept to break up encampments because that community is really keeping each other safe for a variety of reasons. And so We're expecting to see some of that community building happen as well. And then with the additional training and support of our team and our experience, we expect to see folks really not only rest, but begin to flourish.
And just in terms of, you know, the funding for this, how did it all come together, and also the siting of it to be able to have it, you know, it's basically right next to a highway on-ramp. What were some of the challenges in trying to find a location and trying to find the money to make it all happen?
Right. So the Echo Village is supported with federal dollars. So there is the... we've got a very busy morning over here. Sorry about that. We do have federal dollars in place. So a lot of the pandemic-related dollars to make this possible, which is also very kind of an interesting thing that we witnessed through the pandemic, that this sort of a model grew across the country and became something that other communities could use those federal dollars to support. But of course, the siting became a significant issue over these few years. As I also researched other communities doing this work, the common denominator was they were successful when they were in partnership with either a municipality or a state level, elected official. And one of the biggest ways, aside from leadership, that those entities can get involved is they have access to oftentimes land. And so we spent a significant amount of time working with various municipalities or the state to identify what parcels might be well suited for this kind of a concept. So we had a basic criteria that we set out where it needed to be, centrally located. It couldn't be, out in the woods somewhere where you didn't have either bus access or, a lot of our folks are on bicycles or foot. So we needed to have some connectivity that way or to other types of amenities like a grocery store or other services that people are trying to access. So we tried to narrow it down based on that criteria. And we did. We landed at this location in Providence. This was our seventh attempt across Rhode Island. And it is. It's in the cloverleaf of an on-ramp to a highway. Not uncommon when you look at these communities across the country. These units are really small, and they can be configured in really interesting sort of clusters. And so that gives you flexibility that you don't otherwise have if you're just building one large building. So many communities are using parcels of land that are maybe awkwardly shaped or maybe otherwise not used. And that was the case with this Victor Street location. It's a parcel of land that otherwise would not be developed for any other purpose. And we worked with the Department of Transportation, the National Highway Safety Transportation Board to get permission to be located near that on-ramp. And so we've worked through all of those processes to find and land on this final location. And it's pretty surprising. When I first went, I was highly skeptical of this specific area because of just that reason. But when I visited the site, it's in a bit of an interesting little kind of bowl, if you will. And it creates some protection from the noise. And it's a bit deceiving because it is a bit set back from that on-ramp. So it's not like folks are literally against the highway. There is safety in place and there is some fencing as well. And again, we'll have staff on site. So it's not uncommon when you look at the other, 100 plus communities that Pallet has done this in all across North America. Echo Village doesn't look too dissimilar to the way that other communities have tackled this issue.
And what is the cost of one of these units to be able to deploy one of these?
Each individual sweeping unit. So Pallet has a few different types of structures that they sell, and the sweeping units are 70 square feet. So they're 7 by 10. They're anywhere between around $10,000 to $15,000 a piece. And we have 45 of these structures. In addition, we have four slightly larger units that are 120 square feet, and we're using those for office spaces. And then we have a 400 square foot community room where folks can have fellowship and have meals. And then we have additional structures that have bathrooms and showers and some laundry in there. So it's been about just over $1 million of product that has been purchased from Pallet to create just those structures for those kind of one-time startup costs. And then, you know, the budget for this kind of a project is we started off with $3.3 million. And so it was about $1 million for product, $1 million for construction, and about $1 million to operate the shelter for a year. And of course, I know this project has dominated a lot of the news cycle here in Rhode Island. And so there were a number of additional costs incurred that were largely in part due to building and fire code requirements, where we needed to put in fire suppression systems and apply some fire retardant paint in order to be in line with our life safety code here.
Well, hopefully this is an idea that catches on in other communities. I think something like this could work in New Bedford. I'm sure you agree. And we'd like to see this happen more often to help some of these unhoused populations around the country.
Absolutely. You know, I think what the beauty of the nonprofit sector is that we're dreamers and innovators and coming up with all sorts of creative ideas. And so this is one really innovative way with input from those that we're serving that other communities here in New England have undertaken. Burlington, Vermont is in, I believe, U2. Boston has already opened and closed theirs. And they're working on a community in Connecticut as well. So this is a concept that is happening far and wide. And whether New Bedford decides to take on this kind of an initiative, I applaud anyone that's thinking creatively and outside of the box about how can we meet the needs of folks in our community. Because that, at the end of the day, is our responsibility to make sure that all humans have a safe, dignified place to sleep at night.
Absolutely. Thank you, Laura, for joining us. And we'll stay in touch and see how things go along as you're moving more and more folks in.
Absolutely. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You as well.
And that is Laura Jaworski, the executive director of House of Hope in Rhode Island. They're the ones that are overseeing Echo Village. And hopefully that answered some of the questions that I have and that you have as well. And we can talk more about it coming up. But right now, I've got to take a break. We'll be back in a few moments. We're going to be going in the news in just a moment. Rich sent in an app chat message saying, 4-car motor vehicle crash on 195 West at Mount Pleasant Street overpass. Expect long delays headed toward Dartmouth. So keep that in mind if you're heading out that way. We're going to take a break for the news. When we come back on the other side, more with you, 508-996-0500. What do you think about the Pallet Village idea for New Bedford? Did hearing more about the details make you more in support of it? DSY says he's 100% behind it.